Have you ever heard of a Freudian slip? It's when you say one thing and you really mean your mother. I mean another. Oh, I meant mother. Okay, whatever. It's a joke. It's a Freudian slip joke. You want to hear another? Since that one went over so well. The guy's in his therapist's office in a session. And he's like, doctor, you know those Freudian slips that you've mentioned before? Doctor says, yeah. And the guy says, I think I had one the other day. I was speaking to my mother, and I meant to ask her, could you please pass the salt? And accidentally, it came out as, I hate you, you ruined my life! Okay, so anyways, this is the delivery. I practiced that, by the way, all day. I practiced that, the delivery of that joke. So, the Freudian slip, named for Sigmund Freud. What's the deal with that? The idea is, you know, it's interesting. I don't know if history has been kind to Freud. I'm not sure if he deserved that history should treat him kindly. It's over 100 years since his theory was the most popular, most dominant theory in psychology. But at this point, a lot of what he taught is not really so highly regarded. However, I would say I'm very qualified to have an opinion on this. It's like ChatGPT, you know, he knows how to talk, but there's not any necessarily basis to anything he says. I'm like pretty much the human equivalent to that. But in my opinion, if I do say so myself, probably the most enduring contribution of Freud, meaning the idea he introduced that people pretty much still believe to be true, and it's the basis for a lot of stuff, is the idea of the unconscious. And I know we say subconscious. Well, I want to tell you something. The word's not subconscious or unconscious. It's unbewusste. He wrote in German. And unbewusste means the unknown. But technically, the way that it was translated in the clinical writings was unconscious, but for whatever reason, the more popular variation is the subconscious. I'm just letting you know, it's one of those cases where you sound more erudite when you say it wrong, but it really is unconscious. Or if you want to sound really impressive, you could say unbewusste. Okay, so at any rate, what's the idea? The idea of the unbewusste? Freud got this idea. It's interesting, it was sort of like the proverbial apple that fell on Newton's head. There's always an origin story of how people get these big ideas. So Freud was watching a hypnosis performance in France. What else do you do in France? You know, go see a hypnotist performing. So he was watching a stage hypnotist, and the stage hypnotist calls a guy up on the stage, a volunteer from the audience, and he gave him a hypnotic suggestion or post-hypnotic suggestion that when I give a certain gesture, you're going to get up and open your umbrella. This was back in France in the olden days when people carried umbrellas. So in case you're going to question me and say, why did he have an umbrella? So maybe it was raining that day. You can't prove that it wasn't. So at any rate, he told the stage hypnotist in this story, tells the guy, when I make a signal, you're going to stand up and open your umbrella. So then he woke him up from his trance, said, go sit back down. And the stage hypnotist made the signal, and the guy stood up and he opened up his umbrella, and everybody laughed. And the guy was standing there sort of confused and probably somewhat humiliated, which is always great fun. And the hypnotist then, to make it even funnier, he says to the guy, why did you do that? And the guy's like, I have no idea why I did that. So the hypnotist said, did somebody tell you to do that? And the guy's like, no, nobody told me to do it. And Freud was like, wow, this guy thinks nobody told him to do it. That's powerful. And then he started thinking, I wonder if there's stuff running in the background of our own minds that we're telling ourselves to do, and we would swear up and down that nobody told, we didn't tell ourselves to do it. There was no suggestion. It was totally out of the clear blue sky. And really, it's not out of the clear blue sky. Really, it's coming from somewhere, just like the hypnotist suggested to this guy. Maybe there's a part of ourselves that talks to ourselves in a undercover, incognito type of way. At any rate, so that's the unbewusste, that's the unconscious. Why am I talking about this? Okay, put that on hold for a second. So this week, we start a new Chumash Vayikra, the third book of the five books of Moses. And it is mostly about sacrifices, the animal sacrifices that were brought in the temple. Yeah. In English, which is really Greek, no, not English is really Greek, but in this case, this English word is from Greek. They call it Leviticus. You know why they call it Leviticus? Because it's laws that mostly apply to the people who work in the temple, in the Beis HaMikdash, meaning the Levium, the Kehanim and the Levium. Yeah, that's why it's called Leviticus. That's right. Isn't there a cat in Cats called Deuteronomy? No? I don't know. That's what I heard. I think it's really originally it's a T.S. Eliot poem. Or maybe it's not. I don't know what I'm talking. Just Google it. Just. At any rate, is everyone having fun? You having fun? Okay. You want to take a break? Should we take an intermission? It's like Cats. Maybe we'll take an intermission. Okay. But Google that. Fact check. You know. Should I say Jamie pulled that up for me? Okay, at any rate, I got my audience, that's it, I'm locked in, okay, it doesn't, I hate you, you ruined my life, I got a good laugh from that last time, so, okay, so, Vayikra, Leviticus, in Parshas Vayikra, the first Torah portion of the book of Vayikra, we talk about different karbonis, different sacrificial offerings in the temple. I'm looking here in chapter 4 of Yadaber Hashem L'Meisha Lemer. Hashem spoke to Meisha saying, Dabel ben Yisrael, convey to the Jewish people the following, Lemer saying, Nefesh, a soul, a person, Kisechta v'shgaga, who sinned Bishgaga. Bishgaga means inadvertently, not bemazed. Bemazed means on purpose. I know what I did, and I'm happy I did it. Or at least it seemed like a good idea at the time. And bishgaga means bishoigeg. It means inadvertently. I didn't know you couldn't do that. Officer, I wasn't aware that that was a problem. Okay. And then throughout this chapter, he speaks about the Chumash, the Torah, speaks about various different sacrificial offerings that are brought as an atonement for people who sin bishgaga, inadvertently. First, it talks about a Kohen Gadol, a high priest who sins inadvertently, and then it talks about when the community as a whole, the entire congregation, then it talks about when a Nasi, a leader, sins inadvertently, and then finally an individual. And they all have to bring various offerings, which are a little bit different for each situation, but they're all under the category called chatas. Chatas means a sin offering. A chatas is not for a purposeful sin. It's not for something somebody did on purpose. A chatas, all of these different variations of chatas are for something the people did bishgaga, inadvertently. Okay, fine. So far, so good? Yeah. All right, so here's the basic question, simple question, not such a deep question. Why would a person need atonement for something that they did on accident? Like they didn't even know what they were doing was wrong, or they didn't understand the circumstances that they were they got up and they thought it was Wednesday and they started making their smoothie. And then someone said, hey, it's Shabbos. Oh, no. If I would have realized, I would never have done. So the whole thing was inadvertent. Why is there an atonement required to the extent that it requires a sacrifice when somebody does something they didn't even want to do, they didn't intend to do? If I would have known, if I would have understood, I would never have done it. So that's the question. It's a basic question, okay? We're examining the basic premise of why a chatas even exists. Why does a person need atonement for something that they didn't even realize they were doing?
Okay. Destroyed his life.
What? Because his mother destroyed his life. Right, exactly. That's always a good answer, by the way. That's a go-to answer. You could always whip that one out, and you won't be wrong. Okay, so King Solomon, the wisest of all men, Shlomo Melech, he says in his Proverbs, Mishlei, Loi yu'une latzadik kol ovin. It will not befall a righteous person any iniquity, any sin. It will not befall a righteous person any sin. What does it mean, it will not befall? Yu'une means befall or happen. What do you mean happen? A sin is a conscious choice. It doesn't happen. Oh, things just happen. It didn't happen. You made a choice. It was a behavior. So why does it say it won't befall him? Like, I understand if you say it won't befall him that somebody else will do something to him, right? Because that's totally out of his control. But a sin, oven is a sin. A sin is, that's your own choice. So Chassidus explains, no. Here's what it's talking about. When Shlomo Melech says La Yu'una La Tzadik Kol Oven, it's specifically talking about stuff that, so to speak, just kind of happens. It wasn't a choice, at least not a conscious choice. In other words, what is the meaning of that verse according to Chassidus? And actually, it's not even according to Chassidus, because Rashi says, I mean, it's pshat, but Chassidus explains why this is so. Rashi says b'shoigig. It won't happen, an inadvertent sin. But Chassidus explains why is that so. Basically, okay, a little Tanya here. And if you want more of this, Mondays, 11 a.m., in this very room, we have Tanya. We're finishing chapter 37, God willing, next week. So you missed this time around chapter 10. But I'll tell you what it says in chapter 10. It says that a tzaddik is somebody who has no ra. What is ra? Ra you could translate as evil. But Tanya defines ra in chapter 6, actually, as a separate sense of selfhood that asserts its will and does not surrender to the will of God. That's why they say ego is E-G-O, edging God out, right? Reading God of our understanding, that's in there. Okay, you got to that word yet? That's a famous word, E-G-O, edging God out. So that's what a tzaddik is. A tzaddik has no ra. Ra means not only like nefarious, scheming, plotting, evil. Ra means any sense of separate selfhood that would drive somebody to do anything that's not completely in alignment with the Ratzon Elyon, with the supernal will. So a tzaddik is devoid of that, okay? As opposed to, and I'm not going to do a whole Tanya shir over here, but as opposed to a regular person, what's called a Beinoni. A Beinoni is not devoid of that. He has a healthy ego. He has what we call an animal soul. And it is pushing him sometimes to do things that he shouldn't do. Not that it's immoral, but it's amoral. It's a survival mechanism. It basically just wants to preserve his body. And so it's not really thinking about what's right or what's wrong. It's just sort of telling him, look out for number one. And so a regular person has that impulse. And sometimes it drives him to make immoral choices. As I said, the impulse itself is not immoral, it's amoral, but the choices that a person makes, if they listen to that voice, are sometimes immoral choices. At any rate, a tzaddik, he doesn't have that internal conflict, he has a totally different type of experience of life, because he's devoid of the. And David HaMelech says, and it's actually brought in chapter 1 of Tanya, that Libi Cholo Bekirbi, my heart is devoid within me. It means Ki Horga Betainus. He killed it through fasting, through his tshuva, which was accompanied by fasting punishing himself. Not that this is a way that we necessarily follow today, especially after the Baal Shem Tov taught other ways of self-refinement. But that's how David did it, and he destroyed that part of him. So he didn't have at a certain point, he did not have that part of human nature anymore. All he was left with was his godly nature, which is the neshama, the chelak elikam imal, like the Alter Rebbe adds in chapter 2, mamash, literally a part of God above. However, if you're following, within this category called tzaddik, there's actually two levels, tzaddik gomer and tzaddik she'ena gomer, which is also equivalent to tzaddik viraloi and tzaddik v'toivloi. Tzaddik viraloi means he has a little bit of ra in him. Well, hold on a second. You just defined a tzaddik as being devoid of ra. Yeah, for all practical purposes, he is devoid of ra. It wouldn't ever voice its desires. Like, he doesn't experience it as a conscious impulse, and therefore he doesn't have to battle it. Like a regular person definitely has that voice of selfishness that he has to battle. The tzaddik viraloi, or tzaddik she'ena gamer, the incomplete tzaddik, the lower level of tzaddik, he doesn't have that. However, on a very, very, very subtle level, there are trace amounts of ra, of selfishness, in his system. Now, it's not enough that it would ever rear its head on a conscious level, but it's enough that on an unconscious level, it's there in the background. It's not enough that it would make him sin. He would never sin. He's a tzaddik. He would never choose to sin. But it's enough that he has, albeit perhaps on an unconscious level, he has some type of sympathy to things that are against God's will. He has some type of attraction to them. Again, on a very, very subtle level. It's not enough that would actually lure him to commit a sin. He'll never commit a sin. He's a tzaddik. But what could happen is, because he's attracted to these things unconsciously, spiritually, this is what Chassidus explains, spiritually, he could draw these things into his life, and they could happen to him as unwitting sins, as unintentional sins. Now, the higher level tzaddik, tzaddik gamur, or tzaddik v'toivloi, he is so devoid of this ra, of this selfishness, that not only does he have no active voice that would tempt him to sin, but he's also free even from the unconscious attraction to these things, and therefore it won't even come into his orbit. And that is what Chassidus explains, Shlomo HaMelech is describing when he says that no sin will befall the righteous. And Rashi says, an Aveira B'Shogeg, an unwitting Aveira, Chassidus explains it's talking about a tzaddik gomer, meaning somebody who's so pure that not only will he never choose to sin, but sins will not enter his life, because he's not putting out any type of unspoken signal that would sort of draw them, summon them into his life. He just has no connection to them. By the way, parenthetically, I just want to mention, because he has no relationship to this bad stuff, not even on an unconscious level, that is why he is so non-judgmental of others. Yes, because I'm going to share with you a secret. The people who get the angriest at other people's sins are the ones who are secretly jealous. Yeah, of course. Why are they so upset? They're upset because it's not fair. I make sacrifices to be a moral person, and you get to have all the fun? So they become indignant. They become the morality police. A tzaddik gomer, he doesn't think that averas are fun. He thinks they're disgusting and painful and destructive. So he wouldn't ever envy somebody who's sinning. He would feel bad for them, and therefore he would treat them with compassion. Complete, pure compassion that's not mixed with any self-righteous indignation. Okay, just mentioning that on the side. The point is, there is such a person, and I'm not saying this is a common condition. To the contrary, it's a very uncommon condition. In fact, any type of tzaddik is rare. The Medrash tells us that Hashem saw at the beginning of time that the tzaddikim are very rare, and therefore he spread them out throughout the timeline of history. A few here, a few there. And that's just talking about tzaddikim in general. But for sure, tzaddik gomer is extremely rare. The Tanya says a tzaddik gomer is synonymous with what the Zohar calls B'nai Aliyah. And it says clearly about the B'nai Aliyah and the men of ascent in the Zohar, it says that they're extremely uncommon. At any rate, what do we understand here? That there is such a person who is so plugged in to holiness that not only he would never purposely sin, but there's nothing in him even deep down. Like you give him the, what do you call it, what's the sodium pentothal? Is that the truth serum? Yeah, that's what it is, right? Sodium pentothal, yeah. Do they use it ever as an anesthetic? I think so, right? Because people say stuff when they're... I've heard from anesthesiologists that you have to be more confidential than a therapist. Because people could still lie to their therapists. People do. I knew a guy who told me. I went to therapy for 10 years and it didn't help. But he says, I give the therapist a little bit of slack because I was lying to him the whole time. So I said, why did you lie to the guy? And he said, well, I was paying so much money, I couldn't afford for him to have a bad impression of me. So I want him to think well of me, you know, paying that much money. I don't want him to think poorly of me. So the sodium pentothal. So the tzaddik is the guy that even you give him the sodium pentothal, truth serum, and you're like, come on, admit it. You attempted just a little bit. And he'd be like, no, not at all. I feel bad for people who go away from Hashem's will. I have no desire to do that. Zero desire. Okay, so because he has zero desire for it, he doesn't draw it into his life. It will never happen, not even as an accident. We know nothing's an accident, but even what we would morally term an accident, meaning something that is not morally anyone's responsibility, that will not happen to him. Okay, so I'll tell you a story. The story is the Balatanya, since we're talking about so much Tanya, I'll tell you a story of the Balatanya, the Alter Rebbe, like we call him in Chabad. He was arrested on a Thursday night, and they put him in the black carriage that was for capital criminals. This is where they put people who are going to be tried on capital charges, such as treason, which is what he was charged with, punishable by death. So it was Thursday night, and by Friday morning at 10:30 in the morning, it was 6 hours before Shabbos. Shabbos was 4:30 at that time. So he says, I want you to pull over because Shabbos is coming. It's 10:30 in the morning, Friday morning. He says, I want you to pull over because Shabbos is coming. So So they said no. So the axle broke on the carriage. They said, okay, we're gonna go to town, we're gonna get some supplies, we're gonna fix the axle, and they fixed it. And they were about to go, and he said, I want you to stop here for Shabbos. And they're like, no, you're the prisoner, you know. So they tried to go, and all of a sudden, one of the horses died. So they realized that something's happening over here, and they were like, okay, so do us a favor. We see that you're doing some of your holy stuff. You're not letting the carriage go. Let us get to a town so at least we can stay in a hotel. He's like, no, we're going to stay right here. And that's what they did. And they stayed on the side of the road. And this was in the 1790s. And there was, so this story was from the 6th Lubavitcher Rebbe told this story. And he said he knew a chassid, Reb Machol, from Neville, this town. On the way from Liozhne to Peterburg, they went by way of Vitebsk. They passed Neville, if you know geography of White Russia. So the Friedrich Rebbe said that he knew an old chassid who knew people who could spot the tree. They could say, this tree is the tree where the Baal HaTanya spent Shabbos on his way to prison. At any rate, so I mentioned that the Friedrich Rebbe, the 6th Lubavitcher Rebbe, told that story. So when he told that story, he commented and said, you know, if the wagon would have broken Friday afternoon, I wouldn't even say that it's such a remarkable story, because we all know that la yu'una la tzaddik kol oven. A tzaddik will not experience even an unwitting sin. So obviously no type of Shabbos transgression could have occurred to the Alter Rebbe. Although it's questionable, you could even argue under that case, under such circumstances, if the whole thing would be what would legally be termed oinus, that it was beyond his, he was compelled beyond his will. But at any rate, the Friedrich Rebbe said, if the wagon would have broken Friday afternoon, I wouldn't even say it's a remarkable story, because of course Hashem would protect the Alter Rebbe from any type of Chilul Shabbos, any type of Shabbos desecration. He said, but the fact that the wagon broke down at 10:30 in the morning, that's a wonder of Hashem. Okay, because it didn't have to break down that early, but you see, that's a wonder. Okay, the point is, what part is the wonder and what's not the wonder? The fact that it broke down out of Shabbos is not even a wonder, because Hashem will protect the completely righteous, that nothing will befall them. Even something that they didn't want, something they didn't choose, it won't befall them. And there are many stories like, there's a story, the Rebbe told this story once, at least once that I know of, about Nachum Chernobyler. That Nachum Chernobyler was sitting in his study and he was learning, and he had an attendant who would bring him food. So this attendant brought him some milk and he put it on Reb Nachum's desk, and after some time passed, it was a long time, the attendant frantically runs back in, and he was terrified that the Rebbe, the Chernobyler, had already consumed the milk, because it had been a while, and he ran in frantically, don't drink the milk, we just were told that it's not Chol of Yisrael. So to get the punchline of this joke, you have to understand, in the laws of Chol of Yisrael in Shulchan Aruch, the way that it describes it, and this is a phrase that's taken from the Mishnah as well, it the expression is milk that was milked and a Jew didn't see it. Because Chol of Yisrael means that a Jew saw, meaning visually supervised, the milking process. Okay, so it's called milk that was milked and a Jew didn't see it. That's how it's described. That's cholavaka, meaning the opposite of Chol of Yisrael. So the attendant comes in frantically, don't touch the milk, Rebbe, it's not Chol of Yisrael. So he says, what milk? The milk that I brought you, well, you know, a few hours ago, whatever it was. Yeah, I wasn't aware there was any milk. He was oblivious to the milk being there the whole time, that he didn't drink it because he didn't know it was there. So then Reb Nochum remarked and he said, oh, I guess milk that was milked and a Jew didn't see it, a Jew didn't see it. He made a play on words. The expression for that kind of milk is a Jew didn't see it being milk. So he was taking it further and saying, I didn't even see it. A Jew didn't see it. I didn't see it. At any rate, what's the point of that story? Again, that you're talking about somebody who's so holy that it's not just he won't choose to do a sin. Hashem is going to protect him that sins don't come to him. They just don't. They don't fall into his life. It just doesn't happen. There's no, he's not putting out any subtle signals that would tell the Ra that, yeah, I might be interested if you can find a way to trick me into doing it without knowing what I'm doing. So therefore, it doesn't happen to him. Tell you one more story, just for the fun of it. There was a Talmid of the Bala Tanya named Reb Shmuel Munkus. Reb Shmuel was a very colorful character. I mean, he really was. He was known for having a sort of wicked sense of humor, and he did pranks, and he was like almost like a court jester. He was also a very serious chassid and a very serious scholar, but his way of serving Hashem was with a lot of humor. Like one time, this is not the story I want to tell you, but he was hanging by his legs upside down in front of the Alter Rebbe's house. And like over the doorway, it was hanging upside down from the doorway. And some people said, what are you doing? So he said, look, you walk down the street and you see like there's a cobbler. And how do you know it's a cobbler? Because there's a big giant shoe hanging out in front of the door. And you go by the barrel maker. There's a big barrel hanging over the door in the front of the shop. You know, everyone, they have the thing that they make, they have a sample of it hanging from the door so that you could see that that's what they make inside. So what does the Rebbe make? A Rebbe makes chassidim. So I want everyone to understand this is the Rebbe's house, so that's why I'm hanging here in front of the door. That was one of, just to show you his personality. At any rate, so the story I want to tell you is that one time the chassidim were farbrenging, they were gathered and they were talking and singing, inspiring each other, and also saying l'chaim and also eating food, farbeisen. And they ran out of food. So someone's like, oh, you know what we could do? We can get some meat, really. You know, there was no Seasons Express, so they couldn't just go out and get tuna wraps at 1 a.m. So, just, yeah, there's a lot of thoughts I'm having right now about, yeah, Seasons Express, 1 a.m., tuna wraps, but that's a discussion for another time. It's a whole lecture unto itself, but they're excellent, and I can tell you personally that I endorse them. Okay, and I hope maybe they'll send me a few freebies for that endorsement. Yeah, so, oh, there's so much stuff I want to say. I'm just filtering it. Okay, Shmuel Munkus, so they ran out of food at the Farbrengen, and they're like, oh, let's bring some meat. So, you know, meat, you have to salt it, and it's a whole process. It takes a while. But if you roast it, then it can be ready much more quickly. So they took a lung, and they roasted a lung, and they served it at the Farbrengen. So they brought it in, and when they brought it in, Shmuel grabbed it, and he started running around with it. And at first, everyone's laughing. Oh, yeah, it's funny, Shmuel being a character again. But after a while, they're getting kind of like annoyed. Like, Shmuel, put the food down. Like, we want to eat it. And he started dancing around. He's holding this platter with the lung on it, and he was dancing around, like, all silly. And they're like, cut it out already. Put the lung on the table so we could eat. And he just kept dancing and dancing and dancing. And then they started, they got mad. They got up. They surrounded him, enough already. And they were going to grab it from him. And he was dancing crazier and crazier until finally he slipped. And it was probably intentional that he slipped. And the lung went sliding off of the tray. Not bad enough that it went and it hit the floor, but it landed in the spittoon. Now, that's something of an anachronism. I don't know if anyone's ever seen a spittoon, but a spittoon is a place where you spit your chewing tobacco. So, when you chew tobacco, I'm sure you're all aware of this. Dip cup, exactly. Thank you. So, but it's a big, giant dip cup. Yeah, so anyways. Yeah, maybe Skulls will send me some freebies if I endorse them too. Kids, don't mess around with the smokeless tobacco. It's okay. At any rate, so you got to tell me.
I said you're on a roll today.
But I'm not. I'm holding my unbewusste is on a roll.
That's what I'm saying.
But the stream of consciousness is not happening. Yeah, I'm filtering the stream of consciousness. I think maybe once in a while I'll just do a stream of consciousness sheer. But I won't allow anyone to come to it. I'll record it and then we'll edit it down and take out the inappropriate parts and then it'll be a nice TikTok, 60 seconds. Okay, at any rate, so they're like, Shmuel, you ruined the lung, because after the lung goes in the spittoon, there's nothing you can do with it. Like, you ruined it. And so a bunch of the younger chassidim, they got up, and they were going to beat him up for ruining the lung. And then all of a sudden, the chef comes in, and he's like, chassidim, don't eat the lung. I just found out the sheikhet didn't realize the animal the lung comes from wasn't slaughtered properly. It's treif. It's completely non-kosher. They're like, wow, amazing. Shmuel, you saved us from eating the treif. But just like the younger chassidim were going to beat him up when they, just a minute ago, when they thought he deprived them of perfectly good meat, now the older chassidim got up and they're like, we're going to beat him up. Why are they going to beat him up? They said, what are you doing this Rebbe Shishtik for? You're playing tzaddik. How do you know? How did you know? You understand? This is very culturally specific. I don't expect you guys to really understand this, but this is very Chabad culturally specific. First of all, they like to beat people up. But lovingly, not to really beat people up. No, I'm not talking about really beating people up, but there's a lot of tough love. It's like the Russian style. But especially the thing you get beat up the most for is being a big shot, and especially a spiritual big shot. You'll probably get less harassed for driving a Lamborghini. I'm saying among Chabad Chassidim, you'll get harassed if you drive a Lamborghini because it's showing off, but you would probably get harassed less for that than doing something where you're spiritually showing off, showing that you have Ruach HaKodesh and that you can look at a lung and know that it wasn't kosher just by looking at it. For that, you would get harassed even more than showing off materially, because that's showing off spiritually. At any rate, so they were going to beat him up. And, he's like, okay, he's like, you guys can beat me up if you want, but let me just explain to you why it's not what it looks like. He says, my first yechidus, I went into to the Rebbe, meaning the Baal HaTanya, and I made a decision that I'm giving away all of my pleasure, my sense of pleasure in this world. And since that time, I'm not drawn to be indulgent in the permissible. There's a kind of Kaddish It's atzmecha b'mutalach. Sanctify yourself even in that which is permissible. So he says, I'm not into that. I'm not into ice cream. I'm not into that stuff. When they brought in the long, I got really excited. And I was like, something's different here. Why am I excited? Because I don't get excited about indulging in permissible pleasures anymore. He's like, ah, it must be that it's not even permissible. It's setting off my inner attraction to the negativity. Because he was basically saying, look, I'm not a tzaddik. I'm not a tzaddik. I'm a regular guy who has to try to control himself. And that lung was, you know, calling me in a very serious way. That's how I knew something was wrong with it, and that's why I didn't want to let anyone eat it. At any rate, the point is that there's a type of a person, a very rare, exceptional type of a person, who has no relationship with that which is not perfectly aligned with Hashem's will, and therefore, not only he'll never choose to sin, but sin won't even happen to him. It will not even happen to him. Okay. So, this is the explanation. The explanation is, why do we need an atonement for something that we didn't even mean to do? We didn't even realize what we were doing at the time that we did it. You know why? The chatas, the sacrifice, the offering that atones for the avera b'shgaga, for the inadvertent sin, it's actually meant to cleanse the unconscious. It's not that you chose to do an avera. You didn't choose to do it. But if you would be a completely pure tzaddik, it wouldn't have even happened to you. The fact that it happened means, on an unconscious level, there's still part of you that is connected to that. And for that, we need to cleanse it. We need to clean it up. We need to deal with it. We need to rectify it. And we have a way of doing that. And that's the chatas. That sin offering is cleansing. It's supposed to help you polish up your unconscious. It's better than going to analysis, right? You go to the Freudian psychoanalyst and you talk stream of consciousness for 10 years, and at the end he says, don't you feel better? Yeah, I think I feel better. Yeah, I do. All right, thank you. That was very cleansing. But this is one, or not. But, you know, hey, it's just 10 years, thousands of dollars. So, yeah, all right. But the chatas, that is guaranteed. I don't know about the 10 years of analysis, but I can tell you about the chatas. The chatas comes in and it cleans up the unconscious, the unbewusste, the part of us that we're not aware of, that we're not in touch with on the day-to-day, in the day-to-day course of things. Now, Pesach is coming. Don't get scared. Pesach is coming. I told my son-in-law, this is an old joke, but I brought it out of the archives for my son-in-law, because I'm bringing him the last days to a program that we're going to. So I said to him, you know what they say before Pesach? Chag Kosher V'Sameach. If you're going to your in-laws, Chag Kosher. If you're going to a hotel program, Chag Sameach. If you're going to a hotel program with your in-laws, Chag. Anyways, yeah. All right, it's just a joke. Okay. So we say Chag Kosher V'Sameach. Okay. Everyone wants to have a happy Pesach and a kosher Pesach. And we work very hard to try to guarantee that. I want to tell you something. The Arizal says that somebody who successfully avoids chametz all Pesach, it is guaranteed that he will not do an aveda b'shogeg for the rest of the year, all year long. Pretty cool. If you avoid chametz the whole Pesach, the holy Ari says you will not do an aveda b'shogeg all year long. Now, why only b'shogeg? Well, an aveira b'shogeg means an unintentional sin. it can't take away your free choice. So if you want to do an Aveda B'mezid, if you want to do an intentional sin, you still have free choice. Avoiding chametz wouldn't take your free choice away. However, it'll remove from you doing an Aveda B'shegeg, doing an Aveda that you didn't mean to do. Okay, why? How? What are the mechanics of that? It's exactly what we've been describing here. Just like the chatas gets in there and cleans the unconscious so that you don't even have an unknown, covert attraction to the ra that would cause it to come into your life. Refraining from chometz all Pesach also has a similar cleansing effect on the person, so that if you can manage to do that, then the Avedas are not going to pop up in your life. There's nothing in you that's summoning them, so they're not gonna come to you. Okay? So I want to wish everybody Chag Kosher V'Sameach. Even if you're going to a program with your in-laws or whatever, everyone should have a Chag Kosher V'Sameach. And, you know, not to put any pressure, but we should all be able to avoid Avedas B'Shegeg, inadvertent sins, all year long. The Avedas B'Mezid are up to you. That's, you know, free choice. But the Avedas B'Shegeg, we should all have some help to not have those come up in our lives. Okay.